This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure,
direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
...the Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeffrey.
That is exactly right, Fred.
And we invite you to visit us at FredandJeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and you can even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on TuneIn Radio or iTunes.
Right.
So, Jeff...
Fred.
I don't know if you're aware of this or not.
I'm probably not.
So we're taping the show on Thursday.
Right.
Radio secret that we tape the show. Right. But,
and it's kind of an overcast, drizzly day here in the Old Pueblo.
Yeah. Last night, a miracle occurred. A 238-pound female elephant.
Oh.
New resident of
the zoo.
The Reed Park Zoo.
Beautiful.
So we congratulate Mama.
Yes. Congratulations, Mama.
That's a big baby.
That is a big
and,
baby.
And
238
pounds.
Wow.
I don't know if the count ounces when you get that high.
No, you don't need to.
But, yeah, so we have a new resident at the Reed Park Zoo. Don't know at this moment when exactly the world will get to see her. But I think, if I remember correctly, Vivian Van Peten from... The zoo told us that there'd be plenty of pictures and some video.
Yeah, I'm sure if you available. Like the Reed Park Zoo on Facebook, or if you're on Twitter and you have a Reed Park Zoo Twitter following, there I'm sure there are pictures of that little baby girl all over the place.
Oh, absolutely!
So that's awesome. So we get to add one more thing to the month long observance list for August. Not only is it World Mutt Eye Grease Rescue,
what?
World Muttigress Rescue Month.
What
will
is
be
that?
Your legacy wait. Month? Or Tomboy what? Tools Month?
Wait.
Or Neurosurgery Outreach Month?
What is Muttigress?
I don't know. We're going to have to ask David from Tucson Happenings Magazine, because I'm reading the page for Sunday the 24th, all the crazy things that are happening here in the Old Pueblo that are fit to print. And it, right next to it is month-long observations for August. And it starts with child support awareness and goes all the way down to National Minority Donor Awareness Month. And then everything in between, from National Goat Cheese Month.
Ooh,
to
like
National Breastfeeding Month, to Bystander Awareness Month, Family Heritage. And now we can add Little Baby from the Reed Park Zoo Month.
Baby Elephant.
Baby Elephant.
So
there's a song called Baby Elephant, isn't there? Baby Elephant Walk.
Yeah, yep. I was thinking
might be playing that one on the way out today, folks.
So,
very cool.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And speaking of Tucson Happenings, let's give a shout-out to David, who generates this thing every month.
Yeah, that's right.
And actually...
Great magazine, folks.
We've been using it all the month of August, but probably in a week from today, the September magazine will be out. So keep an eye out for those magazines. And if you are interested in finding out where they are... go to TucsonHappenings.com.
Well, not only that, if you've got something cool that's happening, you got to send it into these guys, because they'll print it. I mean, they're printing everything that's happening in the Old Pueblo.
Yes, because they printed something you wrote.
What was that?
You said you sent an article in.
Oh, yeah. I didn't write the article.
Oh, because I was going to say, if they're printing what you write, they'll print anybody.
Well, that's not true, Fred. Hey, you know what? Unbeknownst to many friend, I am somewhat of a vocabularyist. I can write a little, but this month, because of the time constraint, we punted to a friend of the show. Yeah, or for September, we punted to a friend of the show, Jim Turner, who wrote a great article on how the Old Pueblo got its nickname.
What's his nickname?
Or how Tucson got its nickname, the Old Pueblo.
There you go.
There you go. So folks, okay. Lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, a couple things that the last. Of the Cox Communication Movie in the Park program, Friday, August 29th, Mr. Peabody and Sherman. That's going to be the last one. This is a fun family.
Ooh, I thought I'd pull a rabbit out of my hat.
They don't have... Oh, maybe. Do they have that in there?
They have Bullwinkle in there?
I remember seeing the movie. I saw the movie when it first came out, and I can't remember if they do any...
Bullwinkle Rocky tribute?
Yeah. I'm sure there's... I mean, there's a ton of little things in there, especially the end credits. You have to watch the end credits.
Hilarious.
Because it's not like, you know, the Avengers and the Marvel movies where they have,
right,
like...
going to go get some shawarma or Howard the Duck or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but the thing about if you loved Rocky and Bullwinkle and the whole, you know, series, there's a little treat at the very end. It's not very, it's not very long or exciting, but you will just sit there and I got a little teary eyed.
Those little nuggets are always, they always get the Vegas nerve going, don't they?
Yeah. So, August 29th, Friday, August 29th, and go early. There's food trucks, there's games, there's stuff to do. And it's all sponsored by Cox Communications Movie in the Park. There's a black tie block party. We're already talking about stuff in September.
Fred, 2014 is almost over.
I know.
So and this year has gone fast.
So El Rio, big fundraiser for them is the black tie block party.
The El Rio golf course? El Rio, what El Rio?
The healthcare.
Ah, okay.
So we'll be talking about that more down the line. Also, message to Banu, get your name.
I'm on. I did it.
The OSIRIS-REx mission.
I got it, Fred. Matter of fact, I'll post a picture of my certificate on Facebook so folks can see what they're getting themselves into.
Cool. And I got a couple things for October already. Tucson Comic-Con is coming up October 31st through November 2nd. And the Tucson Pride presents their 37th annual Pride Festival. And that's coming up at Kino Sports Complex on October 11th, and that'll be a huge party.
That's awesome. And folks, if you're in the car flying across town trying to get to the loft for the Monty Python live show.
Oh, yeah.
Take it easy.
Oh, yeah.
Take it easy. Slow down. But Python Live is happening at the loft right now.
Now, this is, just so you people know, this is a recording of their last live concert.
That's right. And it just happened recently.
Yeah, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
The last one.
And so you can see that at the loft. Cool stuff going on at the loft. Have you seen the movie Boyhood yet?
No.
Oh, you got to see it. It's unbelievable.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you'd say no.
Yeah. And then, of course, later tonight, we've got Legends of the Sky. Oh, actually, that starts at 1:30 at the Flandreau Planetarium. We've got all kinds of music happening all over town.
Oh, speaking of music.
Speak of music, Fred.
There is a wonderful lady in this community. Her name is Kathy Harris.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mom.
Well, Mom, too.
Okay.
But Kathy Harris is a wonderful musical lady.
Mm-hmm.
Once a week, she puts out an email talking about all the local musicians and where they're playing in Tucson and the surrounding areas.
Wow, we got to link it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, so, well, it's just an email. I don't know, we'll put the information up, but if you're interested, send me, we'll figure out somehow to put it on the website where you can actually send her a note and have her put you on her email list. But there's just so many brilliant things going on. Like, for example, tonight, Sunday, August 24th, there's Kathy Davis and the Groove Tones are going to be.
Not like Murph and the Murph Tones?
Kind of close. Heather Hardy with Michael P.
Yeah.
Is going to be at Hacienda del Sol. Amber Norgaard is playing down in Tubac, I think.
Arr.
That's
a shout out to our Viking friends.
On Monday, Sabra Falk, who's been on the show before.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome.
She starts off Lisa Otay's Z Mansion Monday Night Series.
Lisa Otay. Now, you can see Lisa Otay all the time at the Gaslight Theater.
I don't know if she still does it.
She does. Saw her not too long ago. She was fantastic.
But she's...
That lady can tickle the ivories, let me tell you what.
But her and her partners, man, she's got a blues gig going.
Oh, yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And, you know, August, of course, is American Artist Appreciation Month as well.
Oh,
so
very
get
nice.
Out and see everybody.
Very nice.
And folks, lots of stuff going on out there today. Go out, get involved in the community. Go meet your neighbors. Build some great friendships because that's what makes Tucson a great place to live.
Build a gazebo.
And for those of you, for the low-hanging fruit, because they're not mine, Arizona Cardinals are playing tonight in a preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So, I mean, it's hard to believe that U of A football, the NFL, It's the Major League Baseball
the boys
playoffs.
The boys of summer are winding down.
Yep, they're definitely heading to the Fall Classic. So, folks, get out there, meet your friends, have a great time, and we will be right back with more here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
Welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Shukshon.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeff.
That's exactly right, Fred.
And you know what? We want to send a little shout out to. We got this really kind fan note.
Anonymous fan note.
Yeah, it was, actually, it was interesting that it would be anonymous, but it was not in the handwriting of either mom or dad, I checked.
Or sister Christy. Or my wife, or my children.
But we appreciate the sentiments in the letter The person suggested that the show would be just as good if we didn't have guests and you listen to an hour of banter between Jeff and myself.
You're probably going to want to start pulling your hair out.
Yeah,
I know I do.
We disagree. Yeah, I have no hair to pull out.
Because you've already done it.
That's right. But with us in studio today.
But finish that thought.
What?
It's great, folks. It's great to get these fan mails. We really appreciate it. But we'd also like to hear from you guys what you think makes Tucson and Southern Arizona a great place to live. Aside from us telling you what we think, so we're always interested in hearing from anybody out there that has a great idea of what makes Tucson a great place to live. And funny enough, based on the fact we have a lot of shows still booked out for the future, but every once in a while somebody bails on us for whatever reason, we always look for someone to stick in that hole. So who knows, if you send us a great idea about somebody that's doing something cool in your neighborhood or something cool at your kid's school, we might have them on the air to talk about that.
There are so many. Jeff is right. We have a lot of stuff booked
out. Wait, say that again.
Jeff is wrong.
We have a lot of stuff booked out up and through the future. And that includes, we're going to start doing some more community profiles, people who have been in this community for decades.
It's like that old Sesame Street song.
Who are the people in your neighborhood? Yeah, there's some really cool people living in Tucson who have contributed so much. And we want to celebrate some of those folks because, some of the long old timers in the community know who they are and know what they did to support Tucson. But we do live in a community with a very transient population, people coming and going for various reasons. And we want to make sure that the newcomers know that there are some folks here who have really spent a lot of time, talent, and treasure making this community a great place.
That's right.
So we're going to be highlighting some of those folks. But with us today is a friend of the show, a regular contributor, and actually the author of our letter in Tucson Happenings, Jim Turner. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
We love having Jim on the show just because there's so much history.
Right. We don't have to do much talking.
That's right. Exactly.
So there might be a lot of people out there that like that, too.
It's hard for me to get in a word edgewise.
No.
No, we'll stop talking now.
You guys know a lot of history, though, more than anybody else that ever interviews me.
Oh, so. No. We make stuff up.
We do all the time.
And then
I mean,
it's tough questions.
We do. Yes.
Oh, God.
Why did you wear that color combination?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
We know a lot of Apocrypha.
Apocrypha.
Yes.
Yeah, we're probably more comfortable with the big Jim Griffiths of the world, with the folklore.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone like you who's a true historian.
Who knows?
Who could tell us at any given moment that we're full of it.
But so, then you wouldn't have me back.
We'd always have you back because we need humbling everyone.
You've got each other to tell you're full of it.
This is true. But after a while of telling Fred he's full of it, he just doesn't listen anymore.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you are going to talk about something incredibly cool today. I mean, I want to know how you and Fred came up on this topic today.
No, okay. Go ahead. You can tell your
story. I'm driving along. I get a call on the cell phone. He says, can you come down? What was it? Was it yesterday afternoon I got the call or
what?
Tuesday?
It was a couple days ago.
Tuesday afternoon. And it's and he says, can you do a show? Have you got something interesting? So I'm driving a car. I need to get off the phone. I said, yeah, Geronimo. Because who doesn't like to hear about Geronimo? And who doesn't know a lot of stuff or thinks they know a lot of stuff that actually isn't true? Or they've got one side of the story, they don't have the other side of the story. Plus, I'm giving a talk somewhere else about Geronimo, so I always like to double up.
It's a tune-up.
The research that I do here, I'm going to use later.
Cool.
So that's how it came about.
Okay, now, but I want to correct something that may be a malperception that you just created or potentially just created. Like calling you on Tuesday saying, hey, can you show up on the show in 2 days?
Right.
Because, you know, we value you, Jim. You're not just a hole filler.
I'm actually proud of that.
Well, though. No, we because Jeff and I, we'll you know, we sit around and talk about the shows coming up. And like,
yeah.
We haven't had Jim on in a while. So so when we call you, it's like, Jim, what do you got new?
Yeah.
Because we know you're always creating new stories because you're highly in demand as a speaker.
Yeah.
You are the author of a fabulous Arizona Centennial book.
Okay.
Well, I call it the
Centennial
book.
Wow, he's not going to be able to get out of the studio. His head's getting
actually,
so big over there.
Actually, it's no longer a Centennial book. It's a coffee table book because
okay.
Centennial is over. We don't want to pitch it with that because people don't buy books for the Centennial anymore.
Oh, and that really wasn't a pitch. That was just an editorial.
It's a really cool.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Coffee table book.
Thank
book.
You.
Even though the photographer was, But, you know, but Fred misspoke a minute ago because you're not making this stuff up.
Oh,
no. Where Fred said you make up stories.
No.
Not true.
You tailor information for presentations.
For general public. And that's the trick because I do have a master's in U.S. history, but there are some historians that would put you to sleep with what they know. What I do is I go through all the dry and dull stuff and I pick out the interesting stories. So they are anecdotal history is what I like to call it.
But true history.
Oh, absolutely.
Verifiable, quantifiable history.
But that was one thing I was going to talk about. Geronimo wrote an autobiography.
He did?
Yes. Yes.
That's like, yeah, never mind. I was going
to. And I have read it cover to cover several times. And I have in my notes, talk about how it's important to examine documents that are probably questionable and see what you could get out of it. Because we have a lot of memoirs from the soldiers in those days, and obviously those are going to be biased. But especially in the new historical research process, we're going back and looking at these old documents that a lot of the stuff is obviously made up or exaggerated, and looking for that baby in the bathwater and going back to books that we kind of wrote off because there were a lot of phony stuff in them.
Now, wait a second. The new American standard of historical perspective is what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say not just American, though. I mean, the historical studies.
So what's the difference? Explain to us the difference between what historians are doing today that they weren't so much. Because does this get back to the old adage that the winner writes the history kind of thing?
Sort of, but it's actually off in a different alley than that. They use postmodernist literary criticism, that sort of examination, to do a deconstructionist sort of thing. Let's look at the words and see what is true or what they were really trying to say. What's the subtext here? And so we can take Geronimo's autobiography and re-examine it and see, well, what is valuable? And his stories of how he learned to play hide-and-seek when he was a kid, and the kids were very valued if they could sneak up on their parents. And because that's the Apache culture to do that sort of thing, that's valuable. He didn't have to make that up. So it's going back to these documents that we sort of ignored because there was a lot of questionable stuff and re-examining them to see, let's deconstruct it. Why did they say it that way? And what parts of it can we learn something from that maybe they didn't even intend us to know, or that, as I say, is kind of a subtext to it.
And culturally speaking, these folks grew up and looked at the world in a completely different way.
Absolutely.
Than the settlers, the folks that were coming through at that time. So
yeah.
So it's interesting that maybe you're, you know, what I'm taking from what you just said is you're taking a different perspective.
That's right.
And that perspective is yielding lots of new fruit.
The other side of the story.
Cool, cool.
Yeah,
all right,
much.
Folks. Unfortunately, the show's over for today. So, no, just kidding. We got to take a break, though. But we've got these very, very cool Geronimo stuff. So the first person that sends an email here in the first half of the show, send an email to Fred at fredandjeff.com and let us know what year Geronimo was captured by Captain Crook. What year was it? 1885, 1886, or 1887? You get a free gift certificate, $25 gift certificate to Finney's Landing. Send Fred an email at fred@fredandjeff.com. And folks, we'll be right back.
Well, now, who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Say, who are the people in your neighborhood? The people that you meet each day.
As long as you look like the grocer, why don't you tell us what a grocer does?
Okay.
All right?
Oh, a grocer sells the things you eat, like cereal and cheese and meat.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Kraft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
And not only are we celebrating, we're also being chastised because as a good historian, so I misread this. It wasn't Captain Crook. I think he was in Peter Pan. But it was General Crook and Geronimo wasn't captured. He surrendered.
He almost surrendered.
And what's the rest of that story, Jim?
Well, he almost surrendered, and this is at Canyon. Well, I shouldn't give the details because then they can go look it up. But they went in for a three-day peace treaty, and it looked like they had it all. And then this whiskey dealer showed up and sold them some whiskey. Guy's name was Tribolet. I went to junior high and high school with a descendant of the Tribolets. But anyway, they got Geronimo drunk and told him, hey, when you surrender, they're going to take you back to Tucson and try you in a civil court and execute you for murder.
Was that true?
Well, there had been a lot since 1877. There'd been a lot of rumblings about it. And when he surrendered in 1883, they almost did that. But he wound up back on the San Carlos Reservation. So it wasn't out of the question. It could have happened.
Wow.
But so he took off in the middle of the night. And so that surrender never happened. It almost happened.
So it was a trick question.
It was a yeah, it's a trick question, but you can ask the date that it happened because
yeah.
I've got that on paper. And you can ask the final surrender, which was 6 months later. He was out for another 6 months before they got him.
Wow. So let's start with the beginning of your Geronimo history.
Yeah.
Because my big question is how did they coin the phrase Geronimo when they jumped out of the airplane?
You know, for slang, it's really hard to say when slang originated.
I thought I got you there.
Yeah, you did. You got me there. There's no way to say, oh, it was Joe Smith in this particular military unit or what have you. But how did he get the name Geronimo? His real name is, it's hard to pronounce. It's in Apache and it's sort of Goyothla. Spelled very much differently, but it means one who yawns. And some other translation says if you pronounce it another way, it means someone who's shrewd and clever. But, you know, it's those languages kind of very nebulous. But he got the name Geronimo after a battle. I think it was in 1860. It's 1858 or 18. No, it's 1860.
Well, wait, let's start before.
Okay.
Where was Geronimo born?
Actually, near Silver City. In New Mexico. So if you go to Truth or Consequences, you'll see all kinds, and that's 30 miles east of Silver City. But where the Gila River begins is where Geronimo was born.
And he was born into what tribe?
Actually, I can't remember which one. It's probably the Ojos Calientes or maybe the Mescalero, but okay. He's Bedoncoje.
Apache.
See, you guys ask the toughest questions. Well, I keep saying that. But I have my friend Jay Van Orden, who's a world expert. You should get him on here to talk about Apaches because he is like the world expert. Cool. He's been on the History Channel, and Jay worked at the Historical Society for 32 years.
Wow.
And when I came, I kind of replaced, but not really. They kept saying you got really big shoes to fill. But I had Jay come talk to, I taught one semester at the University of Arizona, and I had Jay come in to do a whole 2-hour session on Apaches. And he stood up in front of the, I introduced him. He stands up there. He waits for everything to get quiet. And then he said, there are no Apaches. And then he paused to wait to see what the students would say. And I knew what he meant. There is no nation. There's no complete tribe of all the bands. There's no chief over all of these people. And so there are Bedoncoje, Chihenne, Chiricahua, Warm Springs, Mescalero, probably a dozen or maybe two dozen groups of people, usually several clans, maybe 50 at the most, and they're known by their region. The Chiricahua are in that Fort Bowie area. So
what's the connection then to make them all, why would we list them all as Apache if there really is no...
Because we see things as nation states.
Got it. Okay.
So that's sort of like when the British went into the Middle East and just said, you're this, you're this, you're this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the U.S. just said, here's the nation.
Yeah.
Here's your geographic boundaries.
Absolutely. They had the same culture. They were hunter-gatherers, which was one of the major problems, is that they really hadn't changed their culture much since the Stone Age. I mean, they were hunting with bows and arrows, and they were doing raiding. And so when an industrial culture came in, it was what Robert Utley calls a clash of cultures.
No question.
And any time in world history that you get a raiding society or a hunter-gatherer society up against an agricultural, you've got Huns versus the Chinese or the
Hatfields and McCoys.
The Vikings versus, you know, all of these are raiding cultures and they need an expansive area. Apaches were semi-nomadic, not completely nomadic, but it's a culture that requires a lot of land to hunt.
So Geronimo grows up, or he's born and he's growing up close to Silver City.
Right.
And he's in this hunter-gatherer society.
Right.
And in come rolling in the settlers.
Yes. Now, before that, you've got the mountain men and the prospectors.
Oh, okay. So they come
and
in.
They did very well along with the mountain men and the prospectors.
Well, mountain men and prospectors don't typically plant crops.
They don't take up a lot of room.
No, they're kind of very nomadic as well.
At first, the Apaches were supplying deer and deer hide. They were sort of like when
trade
the French
partners.
Trappers came in
right.
In the frontier in colonial days, and there was that sort of golden age when all of a sudden now they've got horses, they've got metal knives, they've got guns, and this is 1830s, 1850s, so probably until we have the gold coming in the 1860s, about 30 years worth of sort of a golden era, because you know, up to that point, they've got to travel by foot, and they are summer home in the White Mountains, winter home in the Sierra Madres.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So they're on the road several months a year. They're on the road.
Wow. Yeah. So Geronimo grows up in this community that's got limited exposure to these Europeans moving across North America. And then what happens?
Well, you really have to start with the Spaniards
because
they start building forts. The Apaches, as soon as the Spaniards get to the Janos and the northern Chihuahua and northern Sonora, when they start doing their mining and run into various Indians, then they have to build forts like our Presidio downtown Tucson.
Now, those guys were coming in from the south, though, right? The Spaniards?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And the Apaches, as I said, had been traveling that area already. So now when the Spaniards come up there, they've got livestock, they've got metal tools, they've got guns.
Free stuff.
At first, they start to trade, but one of the patterns is they would come down and trade, and they would get their stuff and trade their deer hides and what have you, and then they would go to their camp. A lot of times, they either got money or they got whiskey. They'd get drunk, and then the folks in the community would go and get all the stuff back from them because, you know, here they are drunk and helpless.
Sure.
And actually, the thing that really changed Geronimo's life is that they had been on a trading expedition. Sometimes they turned into a raid after or before the expedition. But in 1858, they were in town, I think it was Janos, trading. And when they got back to their camp, the Mexicans had been there and killed Geronimo's grandmother. No, killed Geronimo's mother, his young wife, and his three young children.
Oh, no.
And that's 1858.
And that's kind of when it started.
That changed his life forever. And he says that in the autobiography.
So why? What caused the Mexicans to come up and raid and...
No, this was in Mexico. The Apaches were in their home court.
Okay.
And it's estimated, one of the books I was reading recently said, in those decades from probably the century, it's estimated about 5,000 Mexicans had been killed by raiding Apaches. So this is just like, oh, here they come again, and let's just, you know, we've tried to treaty with them, we've tried to trade with them, but they continue to. The other thing you have to know about Apaches is vengeance is very important in their culture, in everybody's culture. I mean, if your son had been killed by Apaches, that would change your life forever.
Absolutely.
But in the Apache lifestyle or life view, vengeance is a responsibility. Anybody in your clan that has been killed by another group, it's not just an eye for an eye. It is, you are the enemy from now on, and it's our responsibility to kill all Mexicans from then on.
The whole clan?
Yeah. Anybody.
We're taking them all out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So initially,
but
when
on the other hand, that's what Mexico was doing to the Apaches. I mean, there were a lot of Apaches that weren't going on these raids, but after probably by the 1830s, when the towns in Mexico started paying scalp hunters to come up and kill Apaches. So this isn't something when the Anglos came in, this is brand new. It's been there for 100 years already. And the Anglos didn't understand that at all. They just didn't get it. And at first, Geronimo and the others were very happy to see the Anglos. They said, oh, here's a partner to fight against the Mexicans. And as I said, for 30 years, they did fine. But then when they started to farm and they started to hunt all the deer themselves, then it became encroachment is what we call it.
Right. This town is too small for the two of us.
Right. Yeah.
All right, folks. We got lots more very cool history here with Jim Turner. So stick around. We'll be right back with more here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, the Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt.
Is it?
I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Was that a burp, Fred?
No.
What was that, a hiccup?
No, I ran out of breath.
He's getting older.
He's hard getting to know. Older. Hard to think that you, Fred, would run out of breath.
I just started talking. I didn't take a breath before I started.
You're so excited.
So this is a Fred and Jeff Show.
The breathless.
And
Fred
we
Ross.
Are celebrating the people, places, events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
That is exactly right, Fred.
And we want people to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment. And tune in radio or iTunes. Now, we've been talking with Jim Turner, the friend of the show historian, about Geronimo. And we came to a pivotal point in Geronimo's life where he had been on a trading mission.
Yes.
And came back to find his family had been decimated by the Mexicans.
Right. Yep.
And so then this is in the 1850s.
1858.
And how old is Geronimo at this point?
Well, he was born in 1829, so he's 39 years old.
So he's a probably by in those terms, he was the elder statesman.
Pretty much.
I mean,
this is another thing. This is another thing that, well, that he was never a chief. And everybody, see, the look on your face.
Jaw
if
hit
this
the
wasn't radio,
wow.
You could have seen the jaw
drop. He wasn't
dropped.
A chief.
He
I
was
didn't know
not
that.
A chief. He was a spiritual leader, and he had several powers. And one of the powers was that he knew where the enemy was, hundreds of miles away, and he could say, here's where they are, they're coming this way, here's how many there are, there's one of them riding a white horse, and sure enough, they'd show up, and that was there. So he had this visionary power. Also, somewhere along the line, Usen, who is their higher power, if you will, told him through a vision that he could never be killed by bullets. And so, of course, that's going to make you a lot more courageous in battle.
Oh, yeah.
If you know that. And sure enough, he died at age 85 of pneumonia. So
he was the Nosferatu of the Apaches.
He was in battle for 35 years.
35 years.
Yeah. And no bullets. No wow. bullets. Yep, absolutely. I wanted to talk a little bit here because this is another battle about 2 years later. He said he went kind of into a daze or a funk or a depression probably for several days or maybe a week. This is in his autobiography, and this is what's valuable, is you can get nobody knows what's going on in his head except him, and you got to take his word for it. But you can imagine if your family is killed, you are going to go into a funk. And after that, he dedicated his life to vengeance. And there was an attack again in northern Mexico, in Chihuahua, and he just went into battle like a maniac, just screaming and slashing and shooting and everything. And the other side, the Mexican militia, was warning people, watch out for this guy. He's nuts.
He's
you know,
crazy,
stay
yeah.
away from this guy. Cuidado. Be careful. Cuidado. Geronimo. And so that's the first time we know that the word Geronimo was used in connection with this man.
And does Geronimo mean something in Spanish?
Geronimo is Jerome.
Jerome.
And St. Jerome is the patron saint of librarians.
So no connection whatsoever.
even back in 1850s?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they had libraries back then, Fred.
Really?
We think
they did.
Head for the library. Geronimo's coming. No, we think, or we, some scholars say, perhaps he was attacking on St. Jerome's Day because, you know, St. Augustine's Day or San
right.
Juan's Day.
Sure.
It may have been that they were calling to that patron saint to help them.
To protect them. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Geronimo, you're here. We just said Mass for you this morning or Sunday or what have you. So come in and rescue us. So that's how he got the name.
So this is a bit of speculation versus hard history.
There's no way we can know.
Right.
There's no way we can know. That's the only story that maybe explains it. Maybe somebody will unearth a document that says, I'm Father so-and-so, and this is why we called him that. But you know, up to this point, there's no way of knowing.
Amazing.
You know, much of this stuff was unwritten. Nobody asked him, you know, in all of his years, how'd you get the name Geronimo?
So he just goes crazy
yeah.
after this happens,
yeah.
and he starts, I'm assuming he's leading the raiding parties, or anybody
no,
has a raiding party,
point,
he's on
he's,
board.
Yeah. That's true.
Okay.
And then in 1860, there's an event called the Bascom Affair where some other Apaches, Aravaipa, go down in the Patagonia area, and there's a man named Ward, and Mr. Ward has a ranch out there in the middle of Apache country, really.
Smart guy.
Yeah. Well, they were pioneers. They really
right.
didn't know. 1860, nobody was really cluing him in. Hey, don't go live there, you know. And,
right, and Mr. Ward was probably a, you know, a store clerk before he came out to become.
You never know.
Right.
But anyway, they came and attacked his ranch house, and he had a 12-year-old boy, Felix. It was a stepson, Felix Tellis, and he didn't get into the ranch house when the Aravaipas, he said, he lived to tell about it, and he said he was up in a peach tree when the Aravaipas came, and they made him come down. He was 12 years old, and they took him, and he grew up with the Aravaipa. He became an Apache scout later in life, had two Apache wives, and even after his brother contacted him, said, hey, why don't you come back to Tucson? He said, no, I'm very happy. He's got descendants up on the San Carlos Reservation.
No kidding.
Yeah, and so this is Felix Tellis. And meanwhile, Mr. Ward is saying he goes to the military fort and he says, I think it was Buchanan at the time. And he said, you need to go chase down these Apaches and get my son back. It's been kidnapped. And so they call in Cochise down south of Wilcox, south of Wilcox, southeast of Wilcox.
You're talking about Cochise Stronghold.
No, it's Fort Bowie.
Okay,
it's where Fort Bowie. It's Apache Springs. They call in Cochise, who is Chiricahua Apache, and they accuse him of it. And he says it wasn't me. And they're in a tent, and they try to capture him. He grabs his knife, slits the tent, and escapes. But they keep his nephews, and the army kills his nephews, and that starts a 10-year. Raid on, and this is the Butterfield stage line right in there.
Why did the army kill his nephews?
Because he had killed the men at the stage station.
Okay.
So this is a retaliation.
Got it.
Lieutenant Bascom was not the one that gave the orders to that, and that's something that people think Bascom, it was his fault, but actually the first lieutenant, he was a second lieutenant, but the first lieutenant said, do it. And this is one of those shock and awe kind of, you know, we're powerful and we're going to do this.
So diplomacy was a keystone of the U.S. Army's repertoire.
Well, they did kind of have a standoff, and they said, you give back the captives you got, and we'll give back ours.
And he didn't have
them. And he did have the people that he'd captured at the stage station, but he didn't have the boy, and he wouldn't give back, so then they killed. But it's just... it's a mess.
And is a messy time in American history.
All of that is in my book, by the way.
Which book is that?
Arizona, A Celebration of a Grand Canyon State. Available at Barnes & Noble and wherever you want to get it.
Amazon.com?
That's
or
right.
If you invite Jim Turner out to your event to have
to
him
give
speak,
a talk. Yeah,
I'm sure you'll bring a few copies
them.
Out.
Wow,
I found that on Amazon, it costs $3 more for a signed copy. And I will not charge any extra for a signed copy.
So what you're telling us is that Amazon thinks your signature is worth $3.
Evidently. Or the dealer. It's not Amazon. It's one of those, you know, dealers that...
it's Fred.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way to go, Fred.
Well, you guys have a signed copy.
Oh, I do. I treasure it. Thank you so
good,
much.
Good, good.
It's sitting right next to my book by Bunny Fontana.
All right.
Yeah, the Treasure of Angels.
Beautiful. Gift of Angels.
Gift of Angels. That's a beautiful book. About San Javier.
Yeah.
So we got 3 minutes left. Yeah, I know. Give us one more great Geronimo story in 3 minutes.
Okay. He was captured one time. And that could have been a trivia question as well. He was captured at Ojos Calientes over in New Mexico. And I once gave a talk in New Mexico about the capture. And so he is called in to Ojos Calientes. There's a little reservation there, a little building agency by John Clum, who later becomes the editor of the Tombstone Epitaph. At this point, 1877, he is the Indian agent at San Carlos. And he goes all the way over there to capture Geronimo. And so he calls him in. Geronimo comes in with about 100 of his followers. And John Clum says, you need to come back to San Carlos because you took off and you broke your treaty. And Geronimo says, this is, in his old age, the interpreter who was there gives us what Geronimo said. And here's what Geronimo said. You are the ones who broke the treaty made by the great chief, President Grant, Taglito, who is Tom Jeffords, the Indian agent, and the one-armed general, General O.O. Howard, Do not talk to me about breaking treaties. You and your sick brain. You sent a messenger to my camp last night to beguile me into accepting a treaty that you have proven false. I would not accept your word for it if you now said the sun was shining, which it was.
Wow.
And so he's calling him a liar big time. We are not going back to San Carlos with you. Your bodies will remain to stink here at Ojo Caliente for the Zapilotes and Lobos.
Wow.
So the buzzards and wolves are going to eat the U.S. Army. And then men came out of a building. These are Apache police. And they surrounded Geronimo's people. And one of the scouts, Chief Talcalay, came and took Geronimo's rifle away from him.
Wow.
And that rifle is at the Arizona Historical Society.
Cool.
Yep.
It's amazing that all this history happened right here in our backyard.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show this week. Folks, again, pick up the new the September issue of Tucson Happenings magazine. Jim's got a great article in there on how Tucson got the nickname the Old Pueblo. And Fred, trivia question, anything to give away? Dozen flowers
from
Mayfield?
Let's do this. What state was Geronimo captured?
There you go. What state was Geronimo captured? What state was Geronimo captured?
Well,
Jim,
I tell it?
Jim already said.
Yeah. Oh, very good. I wasn't listening.
I'm not going to tell it on the air.
All right, folks. So we'll see you here again next week for more fun on the Fred and Jeff Show. Have a great week.
All you pretty women, I bring you to my home. You don't have to worry. I won't do you no wrong. Bring it on home. Bring it to the room. Bring it on home. Bring it to the room. Look at here, pretty baby. This mess I won't stand.
The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by our friends at Tucson Appliance, Unicom Graphics, and Architecture Design Group.